is made possible in part by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods, holding a Welcome Back food tasting for returning students, faculty, and residents on Saturday, August 28th. Featured will be more than 100 international food items, including cheeses, olives, breads, chocolates, and more. World Harvest Foods at the intersection of 6th and University Avenue, Champaign.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 WILL Urbana. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for joining us today on the program. On the show today, it's our monthly look at computers, computers and you. Today, we welcome back to the program science and technology reporter for the News Gazette, Greg Klein. Greg writes two columns for the newspaper about computing. They run on Mondays in the circuits section of the paper. One is a question and answer column, the other a column featuring interesting websites. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with your questions. Here are the telephone numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. So, welcome back.
Thanks, Celeste. It's good to be here.
Good to see you. So, you're thinking about getting a program to get rid of spyware and adware, and, well, we better be careful how we go about doing that, apparently. Some of these programs are bogus. What's up?
Well, I guess it shouldn't surprise us because, you know, these spyware and adware people who will put stuff surreptitiously on your computer, they're doing the same kind of thing on the web, faking websites to make you think you're downloading anti-spyware and adware tools when you're actually getting spyware and adware. And given, you know, their track record, not shocking, I guess. The interesting thing is this website that you've referred me to that actually a graduate student at the U of I is doing that's called Spyware Warrior. It's www.spywarewarrior, that's one word, .com. And this guy is tracking on a very regular basis these spoof sites that are out there like that to help you sort out the good from the bad, so to speak.
Yeah, the grad student's name is Eric Howes, and he was cited in a Newsday article last week. And apparently there are dozens of these programs. And according to the paper, there are even phony review sites that rate bogus programs.
So you need to be careful when you're downloading these. The problem is that the two, what I would call the two best ones, AdAware, which is ad-aware, just like it sounds, and SpyBot Search and Destroy are free. So, it's not like you'd be going and having to pay money to download these things anyway. So if it's a spoof site and you download it and you don't have to pay money, that doesn't surprise you, right?
Right.
So it's kind of easy to or relatively easy to fake it. So if you go out and get those, you want to make sure you're in the right place.
Okay. Let's talk with a listener, a caller on line 4, the toll-free line. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
My question, I guess, is along this line. I'm just sort of like, you know, use the computer from time to time and not really, a techie in any stretch of imagination. But I had a techie in my home last weekend. It was Vella, dates the daughter. And he was saying, I don't understand why people are so concerned. He says, all they have to do is go off the web. And they'll never get any bad things show up. And then I started asking, well, how do you get off the web, you know? And he says, well, you just don't go on it. Or when you're done with it, you pull the plug. And I thought, well, you know, I don't know about that. And I was hoping this program would come up soon so I could, you know, at least remember some of the things he said about it. And I was wondering if you can speak about that. Is there some way, sort of quote-unquote a real firewall that you just simply pull the plug on the thing, then when you want to get on, you get on and do your thing, then pull the plug again. Does that make any sense at all?
Sure it does. And let me say a few things about that. One is I read an interesting thing yesterday. It's another website that tracks these kind of problems that we have with, you know, spyware and adware and other malicious programs and viruses and worms and all the things that are plaguing people that use the internet these days. They put an unprotected Windows XP computer on the internet, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Took 20 minutes to get infected with a worm. 20 minutes.
That's it.
Last year, it was 40 minutes, so it's down by half this year. And you know, that kind of, to me, was like a shocking indicator of the extent of the problem. Now, it's literally true, okay? If you don't use your computer on the internet, and you do a couple other things, like you don't stick removable media like floppy disks and CDs that you don't know where they came from into your computer, you're highly, highly unlikely to have any problem. Mm-hmm. And in fact, most of the problems, you know, it used to be that we were worried about stuff on removable media like floppy disks and CDs, although CDs were rewritable, CDs weren't even around then. It used to be we worried a lot about that kind of stuff because that's the way that viruses got passed around because nobody was on, you know, the internet wasn't around and there were very few ways to get online and this stuff just wasn't happening. Now it almost always comes from being online, so if you're not online, you've eliminated by far the major source of the problem.
So in a sense, it's just a matter of inconvenience for a person to, you know, get down behind there and pull the plug.
But anytime you get online, you know, you're exposed.
Okay.
So even if you're online intermittently, you know,
you're
going to be exposed.
Still should have Spybot and Adware and things like that, shouldn't you?
Right.
Yeah.
Everybody needs to be doing two things and probably a third. One, you need an antivirus program, okay? And you need to update that antivirus program regularly.
Yeah.
You know, weekly, monthly, whatever. I'd say as often as possible these days because you got to keep up with the definitions in order to catch viruses because the viruses are always changing.
Yeah, I've been doing that. Well, this may be just plain ignorance, but I sort of got the idea of what he was hoping to fashion was some sort of software that would turn the, pull the plug itself without actually physically doing it. And I didn't really know enough, and plus I didn't want to embarrass him in front of the daughter, you know, to say anything one way or the other. But I just sort of let him go on, and I thought, well, it sounds awfully good. You know, it's too good to be true. And luckily, you showed up here a short time after that.
Well, you don't need any software to do it. If you've got a broadband connection like DSL or cable, all you got to do is reach behind your cable modem or DSL modem and turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not on the internet.
Okay.
If you use a dial-up connection, you know, every time you disconnect connect and disconnect dial-up box. You're off, when you disconnect, so you don't have the problem.
Yeah, I guess I'm standing pretty tall. I got all the, you know, the antivirus and all that stuff, and we update and everything else.
You should have antivirus. You should have a spyware detector or a remover like Spybot and Adware, and you should use those. You can even get both. They're free.
Yeah, we do both of them, actually.
And you should keep those regularly updated because that stuff changes too. And the third thing that I'll say is if you have a broadband connection like cable or DSL,
DSL.
You tend to leave it on and you tend to leave your computer on, which a lot of people do, I do, you probably need some kind of a firewall. You either need a hardware firewall in between you and your computer and the internet, or you need a software firewall in between your computer and the internet to keep people from poking around in there and hopefully to keep, if you get some bad stuff that can be sent out to other people, to keep that from going out.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. Next, we talk with a listener on line one. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
I just came back to Peoria after quite a while, and we just carry our computer with us, and we keep a printer and a monitor in each place we stay. Well, when I went to fire up my computer, the monitor lit up okay, but it said something about it had started in safe mode. And so I restarted it, and then it came up with an MS-DOS version on the screen, once again about safe mode. So I restarted it, and now the screen does not light up at all, and what I don't know is whether it's the computer or the monitor that's gone bad.
It could be either.
Yeah, that's
the problem. Probably what you want to do is connect that monitor to another computer and connect your computer to another monitor, mm-hmm. and see what happens there.
Okay, well, I thought possibly there was some other suggestion you could make, but that was the thought that had come to my mind.
Well, that's the first thing I would do, because the first thing you need to figure out is whether it's the computer or the monitor, you know? Okay. If it's a monitor, easy problem. The monitor's bad, get another one. if it's a computer, you could be looking at a variety of problems. You know, is this a desktop or a laptop?
No, this is a desktop.
Okay. It could be that you've got a bad video card that's gone bad, or it could be that you've got a bad driver, or it could be that Windows has lost track of the driver for your video card. There are a number of things there that could be problems.
Yeah, I have the old Millennium Edition software on there.
Do you have have you been using the System Restore feature of Windows ME?
No, I've not used it.
Yeah, if you had been doing that, and that's a good practice to get into, to set that to make restore points. You might check and see if it's been doing it automatically, unbeknownst to you, because
how
you might
be able to check that.
Yeah, you might. How?
Yeah.
Go to your Start menu, call up the help section there, and type in System Restore, and it'll tell you how to access that.
Okay, that means then that the monitor was bad, and I could then get to a monitor with it. The other question I had is, how hard is it? Is it possible simply to take out the hard disk out of this computer and put it into another one, buy a new computer and put in this hard disk too?
No, it's not impossible at all. It depends on the computer you buy, but most computers will have another bay, another space for another hard drive in addition to the one they come with.
Okay.
Here's your problem, okay?
Yeah.
If you do that, you're going to have two systems on there, right? So you're going to have to make sure you configure that properly so you're not...
the only thing I was thinking of was it's a 40-gig hard drive, and uh-huh. I have about 15 gig of stuff on it.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, well, if I could take that out, I could just hook it in and transfer all the stuff from my old computer to a new one.
Yes, you can do that. But what you're going to want to do is transfer your settings and, your documents, maybe some of your application programs, depending on what you've put in there. But you really don't want to use that old system, do you? No, you're buying a new computer, so you want to use Windows XP, which is what it'll come with.
Yeah, but can I just transfer my Corel user files over?
Sure.
There are only a few files like that, the Corel user files and the my photos, a file that has photos in it. I don't think there's anything else in there I'm interested in. So that should be a fairly straightforward process, would it?
Well, it depends on what you're transferring over and how much of it you want to transfer over. Not that straightforward enough that there are actually software programs. Aloha Bob's is one thing that comes to mind that are designed to do this for you. You know, you hook up a cable between the two computers, you run the software, and it lets you select what you want to transfer over and moves it right over there. That you could do without even having, to transfer the hard drive into the new computer.
Oh, I could do that.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
Good luck. Next, we talk with a listener on line two. Good afternoon.
Hi, thank you. I have a question. It's really a spy bot search and destroy question, and maybe I should be trying to communicate with them. But for the last couple of weeks, I run it daily, and it produces a message that says that it's fixed, all of the problems except for two that cannot be fixed due to the fact that they may be running in current memory or resonant memory.
Mm-hmm.
And it asks permission to run SpyBot Search and Destroy when the machine starts up again and thus solve the problem. Well, I always let it start when I restart the machine, but at the end of the day, when I clean up again, it still is... keeps on reporting on these same two problem areas.
Okay. And do you recall offhand what those are?
Of course not.
Okay.
Well, because I have someone who could help me right now.
Okay.
I'm at the office, and that's at home, and I'm thinking it's something like Gold Star or something.
Yeah. I'm going to give you a working theory, and, my email address is Kline, K-L-I-N-E.
K-L-I-N-E, great.
At news-gazette.com. If you'll email me specifically what, you know, those messages you're seeing,
yeah,
then I'll look further into that and try to address it in my column.
Thank you.
And then I'll give you a working theory.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, something is just eating up my machine and its memory,
yeah,
and I'm thinking it's these two problem areas.
Yeah, and my working theory would be that, you know, some of these things, some of these this malware, to put it all under one umbrella, is self-regenerating. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So my suspicion would be that SpyBot is taking care of part of it when you start up, and then you work along and it regenerates itself, and by the time you're ready to get out, it's back, right?
Right.
So you're probably going to need something more, and there are a number of cases like this. Probably going to need something more than SpyBot to root it all out.
Okay.
If we know specifically what it is, we can probably find, because this is typically what happens, we could probably find some specialized tools that somebody has created.
Great.
We hope mm-hmm. to get down to where the regeneration part of that is and get rid of it.
Great, because I always deny all registry changes.
Yeah.
It is possible maybe it's trying to fix it, but I never trust any of the registry.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That may be.
Okay, thank you.
You know, another thing you could do is you could back up your registry, all right?
Okay.
You know how to do that with a system files utility that Windows has?
I'll look into it.
Yeah, look under Start, Accessories, System Tools.
Okay.
And you'll see a registry tool in there that'll let you back it up.
Okay.
You could back up your registry so you can restore it if you have a problem.
Okay.
And then try letting SpyBot root that out.
Okay.
Okay?
Great. Thank you very much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Next, we talk with a listener on line 3. Hello.
Hello. Person who had recommended pulling the plug, I guess that would work if you practice complete abstinence from the Internet.
Right.
But then you lose all the advantages of
right.
using the Internet. And pulling the plug after having been on the Internet isn't going to really do anything effective, because that spyware or malware is sitting there on the hard disk, and it either is going to do its dirty work if it's one of the things that attacks your machine, or the next time you go back on the Internet, it's there, it becomes active, and you still have the problem.
Right.
I agreed with everything you said, and I thought you covered it nicely, but I did think you missed those aspects of the problem. So he really does need, and it sounded as though he had a firewall.
Yeah, we didn't get far enough along into it, but what you say is exactly right, I hoped I was communicating something like that.
Well, you were getting close to it.
It's that when you get off, that's all well and good. You're not exposed to probes and that kind of thing when you're not on the Internet. But that does, as long as you're on the Internet, and even if you're on intermittently, on and off, on and off, on and off, you're exposed. Whenever you're on the Internet, you're exposed. The only way to protect yourself completely is to not get on the Internet at all.
And
of course, that kind of defeats one of the big purposes of having the computer, right?
Yeah, unless you're designing nuclear weapons
or
something, in which case it's absolutely stupid to have any connection to any other machine, but it seems some of our government agencies haven't practiced that.
Right.
In regard to that fellow with the second hard drive, that's not as much of a problem putting it into a new machine as you might think, because you can only have one active primary partition at a time. So the old operating system is essentially sealed off, and he simply has that much more hard drive space if he puts it in with
right.
two drives.
The point I wanted to make with him was that he would have to set those up correctly. You know, one of those would have to be the master and one of them would have to be the slave, and he'd have to make sure he's getting the right one as the master and the right one as the slave, so that he's booting into whatever mm-hmm. operating system he gets, which I assume would be Windows XP in the new computer, rather than booting into the old Windows ME in the old computer.
Unless he wants to go to a dual boot system. course, which is kind of handy because then if you lose the new hard drive, you can just switch over to the old hard drive and keep on going.
Yeah, not a terrible idea, although if I could get rid of Windows ME, I would do so.
I would too. Well, or you could simply replace the operating system on the old drive with XP, and then you've got two copies of XP in case one goes bad.
Yeah.
Have you ever used one of the, I can't think of the term, but it's sort of a caddy that goes in so that it's mounted in the front of the computer. It's essentially external.
No. You know, I haven't, but I think that's an interesting thing, and I'd like to see it available in more computers.
Yeah, well, yeah, and it's not a big problem putting one in. I put one in and put a 120-gig drive in it, and I can pull it out anytime I want to and put it in another similarly equipped computer.
Yeah.
And it's a great way. You can take it down to the bank and lock it up if you want to.
And if you have important stuff on there that you don't want to lose, that's not a terrible idea.
No.
So.
Well, anyway, thanks for coming on, and very interesting.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Next, we talk with a listener on line one. Hello.
Hi. I know absolutely nothing about computers, but I want to know something about computers. Is there something, a program a person could buy that'd be basically, you know, Computer Basics 101 that I would normally take at Parkland or someplace? Is there a program I could buy for that instead?
You want to buy software to teach you to use a computer?
Yes. You know, teaches me the basics and the terminologies and, you know, whatever you teach you at, you know, in a college setting.
Yes, I'm sure there are things like that available. I'd have to look up for some specific things for you, but I wouldn't really suggest it either.
Really?
What I would suggest doing is exactly what you said. Parkland, we benefit from having that here in this community, and most people in, you know, other communities around here have a community college. We have a good system in Illinois, and they have not just classes, but you know, continuing education type workshops that are geared for people like you, where you can go and learn the basics of how to use a computer.
Okay.
Usually, you know, it doesn't take very long. It's a course that's maybe an hour or two per session, and maybe you do, you know, half a dozen, 8, 9, 10 sessions, something like that, and come out of there with pretty good experience.
All right. I've been having problems with my scheduling to be able to do something like that. One time I was able to work it out, and they canceled it on me.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and the other question I had was when I get to the point where I know how to turn one on, I really want to get a laptop so I can carry it with me and tinker and practice on my lunch hour and so on. I want one that's basically going to be something that down the road I can do something with photographs or short video type stuff, because that's my hobby. And what kind of specs would a person need on a laptop to do such like that?
So you want to work with pictures, and you also want to work with video.
If possible.
If possible. I'll just say a few things right off the, you know, that you want to think about in that case.
Okay.
If you really want to work with video, okay, you need some power. So you know, you need to be looking at a laptop with a higher speed than the, you know, the cheapest one you might buy. You probably also want a laptop that has its own video system. You know, a lot of laptops have a system where they take some of the memory that your computer uses to operate, and they use that for video memory as well.
Uh-huh.
Well, you're probably, if you're actually going to be working with video, you're probably wanting to look for a laptop that's got its own separate mobile video card.
Okay.
You want as big a hard drive as you can get. You know, these days, I personally think that even in a laptop, 60 gigabytes is as low as you want to go.
Okay.
And you want plenty of RAM, probably at least 512 megabytes of RAM.
Okay.
And the rest of the stuff you're probably going to get. Yeah. The one other thing you'd want to think about is that it has what's called a FireWire port or an IEEE 1394 port. This is a fast way of connecting a video camera and getting that video into your computer. And a USB 2 port would work also.
Okay.
There's old USB. Really, most computers you're going to buy new now will have USB 2, which is faster and much more useful for video transfer.
Okay.
And
all right, well,
okay.
All right, well, thank you.
All right.
Thanks for the call. Let's go and talk with another listener on line two. Hi.
Hi, thanks a lot. My computer started doing this thing where you start up and it says it's detected a bad sector in the hard drive.
Uh-huh.
But then when I ran ScanDisk, it didn't find anything wrong. It's gotten temperamental with the printer. It won't, like, print to off my web browser after I upgraded to Internet Explorer 6. I don't know if that had anything to do with it. Can't remember if it actually started that problem before that or not, though.
That sounds to me like a separate problem that probably has to do with upgrading to Internet Explorer 6.
Okay, and when I tried to update my drivers, it wouldn't install them. So it's driving me to want to give up computers altogether here, but you got any suggestions?
It wouldn't install drivers for your printer?
Yeah, for the printer.
So you were trying to update those drivers?
Yeah, I downloaded the new driver and went install, and it was there just kind of stopped or said something was bad and wouldn't go forward.
This is what I would do.
Mm-hmm.
I would uninstall your printer and then try to reinstall those new drivers.
Okay.
Try and do it clean and see if that solves the problem you just mentioned in your Internet Explorer printing problem.
Okay.
That'd be the first thing I would try to do. The other thing is, you're still getting that message about bad sectors on your hard drive?
Yeah, every time I boot, turn it on.
So you kind of know what that means then, and you tried to run ScanDisk, and did it say it fixed it?
It didn't say it fixed it.
It ran its course.
Yeah, it ran its course and
yeah.
Was done, but then I haven't run it a second time because it takes so long.
Yeah, you probably want to look at it, and you probably want to look at the settings in it and see if there's something you need to reset in there. You may have it set so that it doesn't automatically fix those bad sectors.
Okay.
And let it see if it'll do its thing. The other thing you probably want to do is use Disk Defragmenter and defragment your hard drive, too.
I think it doesn't – something crashes with defrag.
Is that right?
Yeah.
It might be because of
of
the problem you're having. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. I'd try ScanDisk again and check your settings first before you do it. Make sure that it's set to repair those.
Okay. Anything from there if it's okay? Just reinstall everything and hope for the best?
Well, as far as the printer?
As far as the boot problem.
If ScanDisk will clean that problem up, you should be okay.
Okay, and if it doesn't?
And if it doesn't, you probably need to think about some more powerful disk utility, like Norton or McAfee or something like that.
Okay.
Okay?
All right, well, thanks a lot.
Okay, good luck, and we're going to go next to a listener on line three. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
For the fellow who called earlier about shutting down his internet access. I think you mentioned just turning off the power on his cable modem, which is good, but if he doesn't want to do that, I don't know if he's using Zone Alarm, but if he is, he can just right-click on that and either use Engage Internet Lock or Stop All Internet Activity to get pretty much the same effect.
That's a good suggestion.
Okay. Also,
it's a nice suggestion for two reasons. One, it would make him go out and get Zone Alarm.
Right.
Which is a software firewall program, of which there is a free version. I and many other people heartily recommend it. And two, it would solve his turn-off, turn-on problem without flicking switches.
Right. Speaking of recommendations, both you and the gentleman who alternates with you in this computer show, I think Brian is his name?
Peter.
Peter, sorry. And you both recommend frequently a SpyBot and Adaware, but neither one of you, I don't know if you're not familiar with Spyware Blaster. Did you have a problem with Spyware Blaster?
No. No, I've looked at it myself. I don't use it because I'm satisfied with SpyBot, but there's nothing wrong with it, no.
Well, since it does something differently from both of the other two in that it tries to prevent spyware malware from getting installed in the first place, I think it does serve a separate function.
Right.
Don't you think?
And in fact, what I've written and frequently tell people is, you know, it doesn't hurt you to have more than one and to use them all periodically.
Right. I use all three frequently and update them frequently, and I have very little problem with any of it.
Because there's really no Swiss Army knife for this stuff at this point.
Exactly.
So it doesn't hurt to have multiples.
Right. Just one more thing. There's been a lot of the news about Google's stock price lately, but I'm wondering if you've seen anything about whether or not or when they will start up their Gmail service and are going to be out of their beta process.
You know, I haven't read about that lately, but I know it's supposed to be soon.
Okay.
So we can Google it.
I'm sorry?
We can Google it and see if we can come up with an answer. But no, I don't know that offhand.
Okay, thanks very much.
Okay,
all right.
Thanks for the call. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and it's the day of the month. We talk about computers. Computers and You is what we call it here on the Afternoon Magazine. And today our guest is science and technology reporter for the News Gazette, Greg Klein. Listeners, you can join us with your questions about computers. Here are the telephone numbers in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. You've been Googling.
In fact, at Google, it says we're currently only offering Gmail as part of a preview release and limited test. We don't have details on when Gmail will be made more widely available. So okay. I'd say if Google doesn't know, then I'm not going to find it for you.
Okay. Well, as they say, stay tuned. Let's talk with another listener, caller on line one. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes. With regard to the scan disk and the Norton utilities, I have a question. They both seem to have options for scanning the free space, but it isn't apparent that they're actually testing areas that are occupied. Are they?
Yes.
They are?
Yeah.
And so if there was anything wrong with the disk, then I'd get a disk error and it would show up.
Well, yes, theoretically.
but
you know, as we were talking about earlier with the anti-spyware malware programs, you know, I'd say again with disk utilities, there's not really a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah.
You know, I think that scan disk catches most things, the most important things. Norton does some different things and goes a little deeper in some ways, and also could create some problems for you that ScanDisk couldn't because of the depth at which it probes.
Yeah.
But again, you know, one may catch something that another might not. And, you know, the interesting thing is that it's often the case that you run one once and it doesn't catch something, and you run it a second time and it does, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is it's not a perfect science. But you're better off, you know, running ScanDisk periodically than you are not.
Well, I am, but it wasn't reassuring that it doesn't explicitly state that it's testing the used space. It seemed to me it probably was, but
well, you see that free space option to speed in order to speed things up. If you just wanted to test the free space, you know, then it can blow through that, and you're not, because it takes a while, as you well know.
Yes, it does indeed, especially with a new big disk.
Yeah.
I was wondering, too, about the fellow that was having what he thought were disk errors. He's getting these errors at boot up, and I don't think it typically runs a check of the hard disk, but what it does do at boot up is check memory,
mm-hmm.
that is RAM. And I'm wondering if he isn't getting a RAM error. And that would explain some of the other problems he's having.
I didn't know that he said he was getting it at boot up.
Yeah, he did. Mm-hmm.
I missed that. That's and your suggestion is good. And if he's listening, that's another thing for you to do in a troubleshooting mode is to try removing your RAM modules in order one after another to see if that problem clears up.
Have you any advice on utilities for testing RAM? There don't seem to be as many around as there were at one time.
Mm-hmm. No, not off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be nice if it was a good one. I found one that looked pretty decent. I think it's called DocMem.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed to test for various modes, six or seven different modes of testing. But I was hoping maybe you'd run across another. It'd be nice to have a couple of them.
I don't have one that I'm in love with
mm-hmm.
over another.
Do you have to change with the DDR memory? Do you have to change? Do you have to have pairs of RAM?
You're beyond my depth.
there.
I'm not sure. That's something I'd have to look up.
Yeah, I was hoping I'd find somebody. Maybe I'll see Mark Zinzal one of these days.
I bet you Mark would know.
I'm sure he would. But I'm getting an occasional memory error. It seems to be only at one location, and I was wondering if you had to replace them. My machine has three slots, and it'd be nice if I could fill the other slot, but maybe I have to have...
All the same?
Yeah. I was just wondering about that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
Bye.
And next we talk with a listener on line four, our toll-free line. Go ahead.
And line four, that's me. I got a little problem with the a printer. I got a HP printer and a Dell computer, and about three times after I use the computer, I lose the printer. And the only way I can get it back is to turn the computer off and then turn it back on, then it finds a printer again. Is there any way I can keep that printer, or be able to find it again?
Has the printer ever worked consistently with the computer?
It always works. It works real good with the computer.
But no, but I mean worked without this problem of losing it.
No, periodically. And I rebooted everything on there, you know, the software, and it still does the same thing.
Did the printer come with the computer?
No, huh?
So you got it.
Yeah, I had the printer before I got the computer.
You had the printer before you got the computer. Okay. This is what I'd try first, okay? I'd uninstall the printer, okay? Just wipe it out like it's not there on the computer anymore, right?
Yeah, I done that once, yeah.
Did you get the latest drivers from Dell or from HP?
No, I didn't.
You might want to go to their website and get the driver software, which you should be able to download for your particular printer. And install that and see if that solves the problem.
Okay. Now,
you know, with the fact that the printer's old and the computer's new, you know, there may be an updated driver that works better with your newer operating system than you got when you got the printer before and it was with an older operating system.
Okay. Now that I'll try that, but if the thing comes up there, says, do you want to find the printer or something like that, is there any way to find it without having to turn the computer off?
I'm not sure what you're asking there. So a dialog box comes up and it says...
do you want to install a printer or something like that?
Uh-huh.
Well, it's already installed. But how do I find it? I mean, you know, I punch yes, but it still won't let me find it.
Well, you're probably going to... You probably have to direct it to... either the software on your hard drive or on a CD that you've got for the printer so that it can find and install that stuff.
Yeah, I didn't quite understand that one.
Okay, and I'm not entirely certain what you're asking either, so we're both flying blind.
Without turning the computer back off and I'm using something and I want to print it out,
right.
And I hit print, but then something comes up. Do you want to install the printer, or do you want to find that printer or something?
So that's the symptom of your printer being lost there.
Yeah, it's lost. Yeah. So I want to try to find it, but you know it won't let me find it. So the only way I can find it is turn the computer back off, turn it back on, but then I have to go back in and find what I want to print. So.
And you're turning it off and turning it back on so that Windows goes through the process of installing new hardware, right?
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah,
I don't know what it
does. So that it gets the printer back. Yeah. And again, the first thing I'd try is wipe that printer out, get the newer driver if there's one there, put that in and see if that solves the problem.
Okay, yeah, guess I better try that. Thanks.
Okay,
thanks for the call this afternoon. Good luck. And we're going to talk with a listener now, I believe, on line two who has a follow-up question. Good afternoon.
Hello, thank you again. Different subject, but on a couple of computers, after about 3 to 6 months worth of use, I have found that both the scan disk program and the disk defrag program, when attempting to run those, even in their most basic configurations, gives me a message that
it's starting over again?
Started over again, right. 10 times, so I want to continue using and receiving that message, and for some reason it keeps restarting because something is changing, and I have all other programs terminated,
right,
to the best of my knowledge. You know how what's going on there?
You must not have all other programs terminated, and you know you're probably doing it with the task manager, right? Control Alt Delete, you get the window and shut everything down, but Explorer and SysTray, right?
No, I don't. I actually just closed the programs on the screen.
Yeah. See, the thing is, you've got stuff running in the background.
Okay.
And because some of that stuff makes things happen on the disk that ScanDisk, a disk defragmenter, is particularly prone to this, are trying to work with, you know, so they make changes in that disk. It makes ScanDisk and disk defragmenter start all over again, right,
okay,
to deal with the changed disk environment.
Do a better job of making sure that everything else is closed.
So what version of Windows are you using?
Windows ME.
ME, okay. So, you know, if you hit Control-Alt-Delete, you'll get a dialog box up there, and one of the things you can get up is a task manager, and it shows you a list of all the programs that are running on your computer at that moment.
Is there anything that I should keep running in order to keep
You should keep
running?
Explorer, and that's not, you know, Internet Explorer, the browser. It's just plain Explorer.
Right.
And that's Windows. It's an essential Windows program. And SysTray, S-Y-S-T-R-A-Y.
Okay.
Those are the two that you have to keep. You can shut down everything else.
All right.
The other thing you can do is when you want to run those, you can start up your computer in safe mode, okay?
Okay.
And if I remember right, and you look this up because my memory might not be good, in ME, it's either you press the F8 key or tap control while your computer's starting up, and you go into safe mode, okay?
Okay.
But you Google Windows ME safe mode, and you'll get the directions for doing that.
Great.
And that, you know, starts your computer up in a configuration that's got literally nothing on, you know, but the basics it needs to run. You won't even get a fancy video picture because it'll load the very basic video driver, you know, and all of that.
Okay.
So then you shouldn't have any problem running ScanDisk and defragmenter in safe mode.
That could solve a lot of my problems.
Yeah.
All right, great. Thank you.
But the other thing you can do is turn off those background programs. That's undoubtedly what the problem is.
Thank you very much.
Okay, good luck. We have a little bit of time left in this portion of the program today with Greg Klein. And before we wrap things up, I wanted to talk with you about Microsoft's SP2 Service Pack 2.
Right. Well, Microsoft is right now it's available for some home users, companies that serve some home users. And pretty soon it's going to be readily available for all home users. Although if you're going to download it, you better have a fast Internet connection because it's big. And at some point, Microsoft will send it to you on a free CD if you ask them to do it. And what SP2 is basically supposed to do is close a lot of the security holes in Windows XP. You know, how well it does that will remain to be seen. Some of what it does is just turning on things, protections that should have been turned on in the first place. A lot of what it does is nag you about downloading, you know, unsolicited email attachments and programs from the web and that kind of thing. It does include a pop-up blocker for Internet Explorer, which can prevent you from getting a lot of these spyware, adware type of programs. It does some things like, you know, it has the firewall on by default, and it turns Windows Messenger, which is a source of problems, off by default. It includes a central security center, so you can kind of tell whether your firewall's on, whether you've got antivirus protection, whether you've got, up-to-date, your Windows patches, security patches are all up-to-date.
And how are the reviews on this so far?
Well, mixed? So far, not bad.
Really?
For something this big, you know, you'd expect some problems, conflicts with other software, and there are some. But Microsoft claims it's like 1 in 10 programs has some problem. And in a lot of cases, you can fix it by just adjusting settings in those programs. So I would say, when it comes along and it's readily available, it's a good thing for people to do. And I would get the CD. Microsoft says they're going to give it to you free, so you might as well have it around.
Take them up on the offer.
Reinstalls and things like that.
And real quickly, Doom 3.
Yes, Doom 3, the game that all the computer gamers have been waiting for is out, and the computer manufacturing industry hopes it's a source of business because you need one heck of a powerful machine to run it. they're saying a 2 gigahertz chip is the minimum, and I think you probably need more than that.
Okay.
And two other quick things I wanted to say, Celeste, on the CD, the guy asked about training, you know, computer training programs. I think you'd be better off getting a book like one of the Missing Manual series and, you know, working with it that way. If you don't really know how to use your computer already, it doesn't do you much good to have a computerized training program. And another source of training classes in the area for, you know, people that just want to get the basics, start with the basics, is PrairieNet, you know, the community computing network here. They, you know, pretty much throughout the seasons, throughout the year, they have classes for computer and internet beginners.
Okay, very good. Well, until next time, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Good to see you back here. Greg Klein, Science and Technology Reporter for the News Gazette. Again, Computers and You is a program we do, a topic we do once a month on the third Thursday of the month here on the Afternoon Magazine. 8 minutes before 2 o'clock, settlement prices should be in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here with the numbers, Todd Gleason.
Thanks very much, Celeste. Good to be back in the studio after spending a few days at the State Fair. And thanks, by the way, to those who bared with us over at the State Fair. Some technical difficulties, not due to anything here at WILL. Managed to make that not the most pleasant of events on the air, and my apologies for that. Let's take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade. We'll get right into the numbers for the afternoon. Wheat futures up 7.75 cents on the day. Had a high today at 311 in the nearby September's, a low at 303.5, a settlement price at 309.5. They were up 7.75 cents for the day. December futures 325, the high, the low at 317, a settlement there at 323.5, 8 higher, and the March contract for the wheat 337 on the high, the low at 329. Settlement price there at 336.25, up 8.25. May futures 342, the high, the low at 337.5. A settlement price there 341.25. They were up 8. And July wheat 345.5 high, low at 338.5. Settlement price 342.75, up 5.75 for the day. September corn now 229.5, the high, the low 225.25. Settled 229.25 in the Sep corn, 3.75 higher for the day. December futures 240.75, the high, the low at 236.25. Settlement price at 240.25, up 4 cents. March up 4.25, as was the May and the July. The March had a high today of 248.75, a low at 244.75. Settled at 248.5. Once again, they were up 4.25. May contract following suit with a high of 254.5, a low at 250.25. Settled at 254.25, up 4.25. And July futures 259 in the corn pit for the high, the low at 254.5. July corn settled the day at 258.75, up 4.25. Dease contract for next year, your harvest month of 2005, a 264.25 high, low at 260. Settled 263.75. They finished 3.75 higher on the day. September oats now up 6 cents at the end of the day. 139 the high, the low at 131.75. Settled 6 cents higher at 136.75. December futures in the oat pit 146.5 the high, the low at 140.25. Settled 144.75, up 5.75 on the day. Bean complex lower, with the exception of one contract out there, that'd be the May futures, and they finished 1.75 higher. The nearby Septembers were off 2 cents, with a high of 601 today, a low at 587. Settlement price there at 598.25. They were down 2. November beans, 1.25 lower at the end of the day, 592 the high, the low at 578. Settled 589.5, once again 1.25 lower for the Noves. January futures 597.5, the high in the bean pit, the low at 585. Jan bean settled 595. They were down 1.75. March contract now 604.5 the high. The low was in that $5 range at 592.5, and a settlement price at 603.25 for March, down 0.25 cents. In the May futures for the only gainer, they were up 1.75 on the day. Had a high of 608.5, a low at 598, and a settlement price at 608.5, up on the high for the day. November beans in the bean pit 593 the high, the low at 583. November up next year, settled 592.75, down 0.25 cents on the day. Now the bean meal, nearby September 202.50 high, low at 198, settled $200.70, down 20 cents. And the October meal 182.50 high, low at 177.30, settled 180.40. They were off 120 for the day. September soybean oil 23.30 high, low at 23.05, settled 23.16, down 4. And the October bean oil off 11 cents at the end of the day, 22.85 the high, the low at 22.55, and settled $22.73. They were down 11 cents. Now here's Celeste Quinn with the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange.
Thank you, Todd. A mostly lower day is how I would call it today for livestock prices. August feeder cattle is where we begin, 118.05, the high 116.80, the low 117.72.5, the settlement that down 12.5. September 115.50, the high 113, even the low 114.35, the settlement that down 137.5. October 114.80, the high 112.15, the low 113.17.5, the settlement that down 170. August live cattle 86.65, the high 84.17.5, the low 85.40, the settlement that down 177.5. September live cattle 86.20, the high 86.20, the low and the settlement. That the number across the screen, and that is a reported increase of 75 cents. October live cattle 88.10, the high 85.75, the low 86.55, the settlement. That down 212.5. October lean hog 65.80, the high 64.65, the low, the settlement 65.32.5, that up 52.5. December 62.75, the high 61.85, the low 62.07.5, the settlement. That down a nickel. February lean hog 61.75, the high 60.80, the low 61.07.5, the settlement. That down 25. And April lean hog 60.62.5, the high, the low 59.80, the settlement 60.22.5, that up 12.5. August bellies 86.90, the high 85.75, the low 86.27.5, the settlement. That down 42.5. And on Wall Street, let's take a look at what the Dow is doing at the moment. It is currently down 85 points at 99.98, the NASDAQ down 18 at 18.14, and the S&P 500 off 8 points at 1,087.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Illinois Farm Bureau and IFB's AgriVisor Market Advisory Service. AgriVisor offers market information and advice on the web to Illinois and Indiana Farm Bureau members at agrivisor.com.
It's time once again to ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
From St. Paul, Minnesota, Dwight and Jolinda Dario write, "Dear Dr. Science, is it true that if cows lie down in the field, rain is on the way?"
Could be. It could also mean that the cows were on strike. Bovine unionization has a long and proud history in the upper Midwest. There was the infamous Wisconsin butter blockade of 1927, when troops of angry cows kept state troopers at bay for months, until millions